John and I always, every second week, talk about local politics. We know there's an election on at the moment, but first of all, we're going to just look at some other local body issues, the stuff that we normally do before we look at the election. And when I talked to Gabrielle last week, we were talking about, what is that fund called, John? I can't never think of the name of it.
I haven't noted it down either. It's something to do with the Three Waters, so it's the Three Waters. And
it's the cash the government's giving to the council for getting on board the Three Waters
train. Yeah, which Tony Whittaker called a bribe.
Yeah, he's only, was he number two at council or something in terms of management? So in any case, the council is happy to take it, and they are, they're a filter for it, aren't they? Because the council decides who might get the funding, but then it has to go to government to actually be confirmed or decided.
So they've come up with a list of what they support and then a sub-list to that of other options. And then there must be a whole load of applications which aren't shown at all on their agenda.
Well, it's probably quite a long list, I imagine, because you've just got here, you've got three things from our area.
Yes, because I know from putting in two applications myself that they had a whole day of interviewing people, talking about their applications, and after me, the school was putting in an application for an improvement to their playground. So it surprised me that that didn't get on their list, but it's not mentioned at all.
Well, they might say that schools already get government funding, so, and even if area schools are shortchanged a bit by the funding system, which I don't know if they still are, but they were at one point, council's still not going to step in when there's other things to talk about. So the things from our area that went in, John, your things, did your things not go in?
No, they're not mentioned at all.
What were your things?
I wanted a bus service, not surprisingly.
Like a whole bus service?
Yes. That was going to cost about $1.5 million a year. And I was proposing it as a solution to the parking problem. Because the more people we get in Raglan, the more problem people have in parking anywhere near the CBD, especially in summer.
So you're talking about a super regular bus service?
10-minute, yeah.
Rightio, okay, yep. And
which is why it costs $1.5 million rather than the $200,000 that the council was talking about.
Okay. What was the other thing?
And the other thing was to do what the horse riders were also talking about and implement their 2016 trail strategy, because they came up with quite a good strategy in 2016 for walking, cycling, horse riding trails all over the place.
Yeah.
And it's still just lines on a map at the moment.
Well, that's one of those aspirational things, isn't it?
Like, yes.
If we do it, this is how we'll do it. And as Axel Beck pointed out, actually, one thing, if someone wants to put a road screaming through here, well, we can't, because one day there's going to be a bridle trail.
Yeah.
So it's something, but it wasn't much, I think.
But it seems to me a lot of effort to go to just produce something which is not going to be much use, except, as you say, if somebody's proposing a development that goes through one of them, which is pretty unlikely because most of them are in fairly remote areas, and you could find an alternative around whatever it is that's being proposed for most of those areas.
Mm. Well, one thing we know, it's not going to be coming out of this funding, which is good, better off funding or something like that.
Yeah, you're right. Thank you.
Was that it? There's three things from our area that are listed. One is the Whangaroa Wharf walkway at $3.2 million. They're not going to get $3.2 million, but the council's obviously already invested in getting this done. So I'm not surprised that they put it forward.
It surprises me that the original project got $2.5 million and that they're doing the pontoon and all the other work with $2.5 million, and here they are asking for quite a bit more, $3.2 million.
That's a good point. I think they've thrown a bit extra in there, trying their luck. Well, good on them. That's what I would do in that situation.
Because all of this they seem to have regarded as something to take money out of, because they've already spent quite a lot of $7.2 million just on administration, actually doing those interviews all around the district and that sort of thing. So they've actually not given their staff time. They've counted their staff time against it, which means the council's getting extra money just for putting its staff in there and them for what should be part of a council job, I would have thought. But,
well, it wasn't. Well, they're going to tell you that it wasn't part of their job last year. They didn't know this was happening. So anyway,
I wonder if they got overtime for it.
Well, let's go down the list, hopefully. The accessibility lift for the Old School Arts Centre, $38,000. Yes, the Old School. The creative space out the back with the storage room and the clay space underneath, which already the clay people have filled up and they need another storage space. That whole project is contingent on having what they call accessible lift access up to the upper story, which means you've got to have a lift. They've probably got the cheapest one you can get, but still it's going to cost another $38,000. I think they've raised some of the money. So good luck to them again.
Because they've got that meeting room on top of the clay room. So
yes,
it makes
second story.
It accessible for everyone.
Yeah, was and that?
They did build it with a lift shaft in it, but that was always going to be the most expensive thing to add on.
Yeah, it was either that or an escalator, which is a stupid idea, I'm joking. Bowling club irrigation upgrade, $9,000. Okay, I don't know much about that, but...
It surprised me that it got in there. And in fact, looking at all these things, they tend to be towards the older end of the population, it seems to me, rather than the youth, which again surprises me that the school didn't get a look in for their playground.
But. Oh, yeah, but I guarantee they'll be like, no, we're not paying for stuff the government should be paying for. I'm pretty sure.
Even though it's coming from a government funder. Yeah, I know.
But anyway, they don't want to set a precedent. The other thing that's been applied for is a bunch of CCTV cameras for right across the district, including in our town where we've been talking about this for a while. Our staff have undertaken high-level estimate. What does high-level mean? Is that talking to the cost?
It means back of an envelope, I think.
High-level on a tall desk. $540,000 for 20 cameras with pan-tilt zoom capability, as well as automatic plate number, car number plate recognition in 10 locations. So that still seems like a lot of money, but I think there's obviously, you can't just have cameras. They've got to go somewhere, they've got to send a message, send a signal somewhere, and there has to be screens to watch it on, and I don't know. So it still seems like a lot of money, though.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see whether the ministry just accept their recommendation as it is, or whether they change it at all. Because the ministry has the ultimate say on who gets what.
Yeah.
These are recommendations from the council, and it's not very clear quite how much the council is involved. I mean, this is a problem with having workshops that aren't minuted, so we don't know whether councillors have actually discussed this, or whether it was only at their meeting last week that they had a chance to talk about it, and whether they made any changes there. But
it's all been pretty fast. It's all been pretty fast, hasn't it, by council standards?
Yes.
So they may not have had much of a chance to talk about it. John, what's this other thing you've listed here? Pura Whetū Ki Whangaroa, $129,000. I don't know much about that, or I don't know anything about that.
You're in the same position as me, because I tried Googling it and I couldn't actually find anything about it.
I found a closed Facebook page.
Yes, that's what I found.
Right, yeah, and I didn't go to the trouble of joining it. I have to admit. Okay, so that's anyway. So, folks, this is some funding that people have put in. That's the stuff the council said, yeah, we reckon we'll ask government for that. But already that's added up to almost the same amount of money that they've actually got. And that's just for their Raglan stuff. So, oversubscribed. Completely oversubscribed, I suspect.
Yeah, it's good to see that there are so many community projects coming forward. But it would have been interesting, I think, just to have them all listed. And it does surprise me that there's nothing about a swimming pool in there, because you might recall that, about 5 years ago, the community board did a survey of what people wanted, and a swimming pool came up high on that list, and yet it seems to have disappeared completely. From.
I think it had to be that kind of shovel-ready thing that they talk about. I have a vague feeling it had to be stuff that was ready to go, that was already kind of
okay.
Yeah,
maybe that's it then. And also, there's now talk of a swimming pool over at Rangitahi, so maybe they're thinking that's going to replace what they were previously talking about.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. You want to talk about the local alcohol policy, John?
Well, just to note that there have been submissions made to it, only a dozen from Raglan, and that's only 6%, so it was much. More important subject as far as Huntly was concerned. There were many more submissions from Huntly.
Yeah.
And that a small majority, 55%, support the policy, so it's likely to go through as drafted, I think. But
what is it?
That meeting was at the end of September, and they've not yet produced any minutes for their recent meeting, so I don't know what happened at that meeting.
One thing you say, new locations are ruled out.
Yes, and they're also saying that the opening hours in Raglan should remain the same, because I wasn't sure whether the community board put in a submission or whether it was just Chris Rayner who put in a submission.
I don't. From the discussion they had at the last meeting, I don't think the whole board put the submission in.
It looks on the council agenda as though it's from the community board. So,
does it?
Maybe it's fortunate that that community board's not going to meet again. So.
So they had a discussion. They didn't really come out with a firm anything about it. Maybe later on, Chris was obviously he wanted to increase the closing.
He
closing
wanted
time
it
late.
To be 3 or 4 o'clock rather than 1 o'clock.
Yeah, so, which is, would affect things like the yacht club.
I must admit, I can't see the advantage because if people are not going to go out at one, then they're probably not going to go out until 3 or 4 or whenever they get chucked out. So. The problems he was talking about seem to be the same whatever time you chuck them out.
Oh, so he was talking about groups of people getting aggro with each other, and if that happens, the yacht club will kick one out first and then wait a while, an hour or maybe 3/4 of an hour or something like that, and then kick the other lot out. But if it all happens near closing time, then they get out on the street together and continue their rumble,
yeah.
Basically.
But the same would happen whatever your closing time.
So. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it just would be later in the night.
You just don't need a closing time at all. You carry on until the middle of the day and then...
I think that's until everyone's so tired they fall asleep.
Yeah.
I think that's the logical conclusion out of this, John. Thank you for helping us. You should have made a submission. But generally that local alcohol policy, is there much change? Like, is there anything significant that you noticed that they're getting in there? Is there more local control over liquor outlets?
I've not looked at it carefully.
Okay.
But as far as I could see from the headlines, there wasn't much change.
Okay, all right. Now you've got a map here. Oh, I hate talking about maps on the radio. This is a map showing Raglan's growth in Hamilton stretching from Tamahere to Taupiri. Oh, is this even worth talking about, John?
It's not working. To me, that it was the first time I'd actually seen a map of Raglan outlined like that to show what the existing area is and how much bigger and where the new areas of growth are going to be. And it also seemed to me interesting to look at the map around Hamilton and see that you've got a pretty continuous development all the way from Tamahere up to Taupiri. Not much of a gap between there and Huntly, so all the way up the Waikato Valley, they seem to be looking at expanding all the towns until they pretty much join up with each other.
I think that's not surprising. But having said that, the government's thrown in the whole three houses on one section that can be 3 stories high scenario. So not affecting Raglan yet. Maybe in some years it might. But
it might be worth putting in a submission on it just to say that you agree with it not affecting Raglan, because otherwise there's probably going to be some developer somewhere who says it should include Raglan.
There's a whole discussion to be had there about, because we have talked about this, about more intense development is kind of required, but where is it going to be and all that sort of thing. That's a big discussion. I probably don't think we should get into that right now. That's all the recent information, John, is it?
Oh, actually, I should have mentioned that David Peacock put in a submission on the alcohol policy saying that they should be free to have a specialist wine shop over in Rangitahi.
Oh, yes.
Because the policy as it stands says we shouldn't have any more alcohol outlets.
And yeah.
He's obviously thinking that he wants one over there, or may want one over there.
But he's not going to get it? Rangitahi's got just about everything it's asked for. They've got their own special section of the district plan,
yeah,
and their own special planning rules.
I've not seen the minutes from that meeting,
so you don't know.
I've not talked to anybody about it. So
yeah,
Lisa might well know the answer to that one.
Okay. Election time. You wanted to say some things about the mayoral candidates and policies, did you, John?
I struggled to find policies anywhere amongst the mayoral candidates, but I've realised that I hadn't looked carefully enough at Axel Beck's website, because under the heading of community, he's got policies on sustainability, community development, community voice, enterprise and tourism. The tourism one, I was interested in the photo that it shows him standing in a big patch of green and you can't see anything below his waist, but Apparently he's standing in a tea estate, which I didn't know existed over near Gordonton.
Maybe that is a tourist place.
Yeah,
some people people like their tea, don't they?
So you can go and visit this tourist attraction over near Gordonton called the Zilong Tea Estate.
I guess he couldn't have all his photos taken in Raglan, where the obvious tourist attraction in the district.
Well, sustainability was his photo in Raglan, so yeah. He's got a photo up at Extreme Waste, but again, it doesn't actually say it's extreme. But
so let's say policies are not necessarily a given, like just because you're the mayor doesn't mean you get your policies, like the full council still has to vote on it. You kind of have power, you're kind of, it's not soft power, but it's not, you don't fully have your hands on the levers as mayor, but you just have power in the sense that...
Well, you have more influence than any other councillor. So
My observation is a lot of people just go with whatever the mayor says. Yes. In the past, that's certainly been the case.
Because he's got a discretionary fund, which it's quite good to keep in with the mayor to make sure you can get parts of a discretionary fund.
How big is that fund?
Quite a bit bigger than the community board fund.
Well, that wouldn't be hard, though, would it?
No. but still, it's an influence, and he's also the full-timer there, so he gets paid way more than any other councillor or even the deputy mayor. So,
yeah, we're talking about the current mayor, obviously, at the moment. Does the deputy mayor get anything extra?
Yeah, well, there are two women standing and two men standing. So,
oh, yeah, I thought you were talking about the current mayor, who's most definitely a he.
But, yeah, the current mayor's not standing, so we've got four candidates coming forward, and I have been saying up till now that I've not spotted much in the way of policy, because I did look at the policy of Jackie Church, and she's saying that the council delivers to ratepayers and residents on time and on budget, and in particular I am focused on delivering a high standard of roads, maintenance facilities, public transport and connectivity. But she doesn't say how she's going to finance those or quite what the high quality is that she's talking about. So,
well, she's saying there is high quality, or she wants to have high quality?
She says that's what she's focused on.
So, oh, I see. Right, okay.
which avoids saying whether there is or isn't, but you could be looking at what a brilliant quality you've got at the moment, or looking at it and seeing all the potholes in the roads.
I can't remember which of the mayoral candidates was that pointed out that councils get away with doing something that no business would, which is not fulfilling 100% of their service each year. So she's worked in business, as has Axel Beck, actually, so I can't remember which of the two of them said it, or even maybe Ra said it as well.
Because Ra seems to have a policy of not having any policies, because he's saying that if you make promises, then you're almost certainly going to break them.
Well, I have to admit, it's, like I was saying before, it's not like a government policy, because if you know, Labor said, here's our policies, and then it became government, and it's easier for them to implement those policies, the mayor has to get the vote of enough of the councillors.
Yeah, but as I say, he's the most influential person on the council, and that also has the most time working there, so works most closely with the staff and chief executive and so on.
Here's a question. Let's say one of the two outsiders became mayor, which I don't think is very likely.
So that's Korikori or Ra.
Yeah, Korikori Hawkins or Ra Puriri. And they don't know their way around council quite the same way that Axel Beck and Jackie Church do. Are they going to be as effective as councillors? They may not even have the support of the other councillors. Like Jackie and Axel have built up a relationship with all the other councillors, or the ones that are staying, which is only about half. Are they going to be as effective? They might get in there and discover that all the councillors oppose them.
Yeah, what would happen then? That's happened on some other councils, and there have been quite serious disputes that have even ended up in the courts, ended up with the council becoming fairly unworkable. But and it's a matter of how they approach it, I think. And I would have thought that most of the councillors would have been fairly reasonable and accepted the verdict of voters, but it's hard to know.
It depends. We've got all these people have value systems, and we're not always aware of what our value systems are. We just feel we just know when they've been kind of crossed or something's gone against them, because we get really annoyed. And sometimes someone coming from the outside can trigger all that kind of stuff, like someone who doesn't value the same things that everyone else has learnt to value and be successful with in council. So yeah, it's all hard to predict. So is that all we're going to say about the mayors? Mayoral candidates?
Yeah, and if people are interested, then, as I say, it's something I've only just spotted, so it may well be that other people haven't spotted what Axel's proposing to do. So I recommend having a look at his webpage, search for Axel Beck, and look at his community page and the links from there. So,
can you give us a brief summary, John? Does it get the John Lawson seal of approval?
Well, it does on sustainability. He says, "I'm personally committed to council moving faster in the climate change space."
Okay.
And then he goes on about all sorts of other issues like recycling and such like as well. But,
okay.
So, yeah, on that, it seems good. And he's looking to his experience in business to talk about his attitude to the business side of things. He's talking about community being important and consultation, and he was one of the drivers of the blueprint.
Yeah, he does have some evidence there of, you know, sign of commitment to that particular cause.
And he's also been chairing the sewage meetings that we've been having with Watercare.
Yeah.
So to that extent, he's got a fair amount of experience. As I say, he mentions tourism and mentions Raglan and the Zeelong estate as being important parts of that. So,
yeah.
He does seem to recognise those. And I have tried looking at the other candidates' pages and I just can't find anything similar.
Ra's page had a lot of information on it.
He's got a lot about the actual approach to council. So,
yeah.
And he's saying that there should be a lot more consultation and that there should be the ability to have a local veto over what council decides.
For the community boards to have veto power in some areas. They're all talking about devolving some power to a certain degree, aren't they, to community
they seem
boards?
To be. And it seems to me that all the candidates, from my point of view, would be better than the current mayor that we've got.
Well, we can't lose then, John.
Now that I've found Axel's policies, it seems to me that they're the ones that appeal to me. But as I say, I recommend other people who are interested who haven't already got round to voting. And voting, if you're posting, it closes today, or if you're
I wasn't sure what that meant. They said get your post, get it in the post by the 4th.
Yes.
So that means, in my way of thinking, that means it should be in already, and today is too late. But I know that it usually means by the end of the day. I feel like I wouldn't put it in the post today, just in case.
Yeah, well, it depends how much you trust the posts.
Less than we used to, I feel.
Yeah,
especially since they found that tray of voting papers for Narawahia lost somewhere in the postal system, including, did you read about that?
Yeah, including the Minister of Local Government.
Yes, yeah, her particular house was not getting the voting papers. That's like, I suppose if they didn't send it to the PM, that would be about the only worst thing that they could do. Okay, that's New Zealand Post. Thank you. Mostly reliable, but the halo's kind of,
town, then you're doing it when the library is open, then just pop into the library.
Yeah, yeah, that's what we're advising here, to be sure, to be certain.
The library closes after voting closes at midday on Saturday.
So. Okay. John, there's one other thing I want to talk about, this Three Waters thing. A lot of people are saying Three Waters, and I've seen people, it's a big deal, and I've seen people on Facebook saying they don't know, they want to know what all the candidates say about Three Waters, and other people have pointed out, well, if you're asking the community board candidates, it's a waste of time because they've got no power over that. But I also think this is a sign of how the national media is so useless about local body issues. They only report about controversial stuff, so everyone around the country thinks that Three Waters is the main thing you need to know everyone's position on when they're running for mayor or councillor or anything like that. But it's a piece of national-level legislation, and I've seen people campaigning. There's someone in Hamilton with a sign saying, "Stop theft of Three Waters," which is, I think, is nonsense. I don't understand how they can argue that it's been stolen. But anyway, I feel like it's actually a non-issue.
It's an issue at the general election next year.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be decided in Parliament and councils are going to be told what they can and can't do.
Yeah, I mean, the councils have to give feedback to Wellington and say, you know, you need to adjust. If you're going to do this, we want it to be like this so we can actually have input, which has been an issue. But just finding out where someone stands on Three Waters is not going to deliver you a good councillor or a good mayor at all. It's a particularly useless piece of information, I think. But I see people really focused on it, and you've got to understand that that's just because the media can't talk about anything useful when it comes to local body politics.
Yep, and also it is quite hard to find out other things that councils are proposing to do, and it's hard to cover local elections when most of our media is national.
I think the biggest thing we want to know about our candidates is how good they are at consulting with the public. Like, do they have a genuine commitment to that? And that's really hard to measure, and you can't have a policy about it. Like, it's a bit more about their personal makeup.
Well, we have seen a lot more of Axel than of any of the other candidates. And we've seen Ra in connection with the airfield.
It's hard because
I think he's got a good point there that council made the wrong decision. But I think he's got quite a number of good policies relating to that and how they ended up with the wrong decision.
I mean, he's untested, and you know, because he hasn't been in council, so we can't really compare him to like Jackie and Axel. But on the other hand, someone who's not embedded in the council system probably is going to naturally have. Better contact into their community. I think that's probably, that's a plus for a candidate that's new. On the other hand, not understanding the council system from the inside might be a handicap as well.
Not used to the council system, one of the things that the Waikato Times has been running a campaign on is the number of secret workshops, and that's one of the problems we keep having in knowing what's happening, because they're not minuted and you can't tell whether or who's made the decisions. So it would be good to know whether either of the two candidates who are currently councillors and standing for mayor actually voted for or against some things. But since votes are rarely recorded in the council minutes because they've had the workshops beforehand and they've actually done all their arguments there and come to a majority decision, which most of them then usually go along with, to actually know what's happening. So that's, to my mind, the advantage of not having current councillors for the mayor, that they might try and change that. But as you say, they might well come up against the existing councillors who want to keep the system of not telling anyone what's going on.
And also the system itself and the long-time staff members who will be quite happy to keep things going the way they are, perhaps.
Yeah, I did come across an episode of Yes Minister.
Oh, yes.
I don't know whether you heard that way back.
No, I remember I watched Yes Minister, and I often see little clips of it on YouTube as well.
They had a whole episode on open government and convincing the minister that open government wasn't a good idea, even though it was in his party's manifesto. On the basis that if we had open government, then people would know what mistakes we were making.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a certain logic to that, I've got to admit. John, I want to move on. The thing I wanted to talk about now was the voter turnout so far this election is not looking very good, is it, John? We seem to be definitely behind the previous 2 years at this point.
Probably only a couple of percent or so behind. And it could be that people are, like me, struggling to find that information, and that before Saturday they will get round to voting.
Maybe, but what I would say is, like, we've got the percentages from 2016 and 2019, and they are very close to each other in terms, you know, there wasn't much variation in those 2 years. So the latest figure I've got is we're at 13.6% total return. This time, last election, we were at 17%. That's a bigger jump. Like, it's been significantly behind all the way through, and I thought it would catch up because some boxes have been left in offices, but I suspect they've been counted now. So it does look like we're going to have a low return, even lower than normal. Maybe. Well, but we don't know, though, do we, John?
Yeah, well, the tradition in Waikato District seems to be that only one in three people vote at local elections. And it does seem to me to come down to that problem of not having that information, that if you don't know what councillors have done or what they support or don't support, then it's very hard to make a decision.
There's a bigger malaise though around it as well. Like it's really not going well. The other thing I wanted to just look at is the Whangaroa General Ward that Councillor Thompson is running for, and Rā Puriri as well. That vote is behind most of the other wards as well. But I got John to send me the same information for the previous election, and we were mostly at the back of it until the very last minute. Then I think we had the highest percentage of vote for the district, although, John, you haven't got that particular date there.
Yeah, but we ended up with 33%, I think it was, and the day before we had 31, and then it was 28, 26, 20. So that's where comparing with what we had yesterday, which was 14%, I think. So
seems to be a rule that conservative areas and conservative people put their vote in immediately, and us lot in Raglan are a bit slack, but it gets there in the end at the last minute. Like everything that happens, people hold an event here, and if they're from out of town, I say, look, I know you're trying to get people to tell you if they're coming or not, but it won't happen. They'll just all turn up at the last minute, and invariably that's what happens. So, yes. So I just wanted to mention that. Oh, John, did you...
Now
you
we should mention, whilst we're talking about voting, that if you're not sure whether you're on the list, then don't leave it till Saturday, because Saturday's the day that you can't make a special vote.
Okay.
If you're not sure, then you need to get along to the council office library before Saturday and actually check that you're on the list. And if you've got voting papers, you obviously are, but some people are not sure whether they're still stuck along with the Minister of Local Government and not having received them in the post, or whether it's just that they're not on the electoral roll.
Okay. Now, I did ask John for some history, and you've got the county elections from 1923 here, John.
Yeah, things don't seem to have been any better. In fact, they were probably worse then, because there were a whole series of council wards where or ridings where they didn't actually have any people standing at all.
They called them a riding. Is that because they were all within a day's ride?
Yep,
something like that?
Well guessed.
That's hilarious.
Well, that was the main way of getting around up till then. It was only,
oh, I know, yeah.
It was only in 1923 that they started to systematically improve the roads and bring them up to the current standard, because we grumble about the roads now, but anyone who saw them back in a century ago would have thought they were wonderful, even with the odd pothole here and there.
So anyway, what are you saying from these election results? We can see that a lot of people were elected unopposed, is that?
Yeah, but again, not in the Raglan area. So you look at the Raglan, well, it wasn't Raglan, it was Whangaroa. So we've gone back to that old name again. Karioi, so we had Karioi riding and Whangaroa riding.
Yeah.
Those were the only two which were contested. So we had some fairly familiar names which are still around. So Swan versus Vernon in Karioi, and Parker, Ralph and Lusty in Whangaroa.
Okay.
The numbers voting seem to have been quite high as well, because as far as I can make out, the population was only about 300 in those days, and it looks as though most of the people from those figures would have voted.
So the Whangaroa riding, you're saying there's a...
Well, there's 84, 71 and 70 for the voting.
Yeah.
Which adds up to not all that short of 300. So I think the Whangaroa riding was probably a bit bigger than Raglan town, which was where there were 300 people living, but that would have included children as well.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, you're right. So quite a high turnout. But then everybody knew, literally knew the person you were voting for, I should think.
Yeah. But I've still got this problem. You can know somebody but not know what their policies are. So.
Yeah, I don't think... I mean, the lower the level of power, the less policies you're going to have developed. Like, no one on the community board is coming in with policies. For starters, they couldn't just turn up and implement them anyway.
They do get asked about things like how much devolution should there be to the community board, and it would have been helpful, I think, if the candidates had said, we think this, that or the other ought to be devolved to us.
Yeah, but I think most people just want to know about Three Waters. But the devolution of power to community boards is actually really important. Like, it's a really, I think it's fundamental to the good functioning of council. John, next thing. I've asked for the results of all the previous elections. Well, not all, but you've got results back to
a couple of decades or so. Yeah,
to 2000. And one of the things I've noticed, I'm not looking at the right bit here. Oh, where did it go? I've got so many different things. Or maybe I am looking at the right page.
There's a different email which is headed elections.
I got it. Okay. So the one thing I'm noticing, is that voter turnout has increased considerably. If you look at the 2001 election, the winner got 291 votes. And then we'll skip ahead to the most recent election, and the winner got 1,200, so that's 2019. And this is Lisa Thompson. She got 1,200 votes as opposed to 291 winning in 2001.
Are we comparing like with like? Aren't we comparing community board with councillor?
No, this is when Leslie Syme won in 2001. She won with 291 votes, just a few votes ahead of Fred Stoneham.
Okay, yep.
And then 2019. Oh, I've lost control of the mouse. 2019, Lisa Thompson won with 1,274 votes, and Dennis Amor, who came second, he actually came second with more votes than Leslie Syme got in 2001. And supposedly our vote percentage has been going down. So what I can't work out is where all these voters have come from. John, can you explain?
No, I hadn't noticed those figures before. So, well done for spotting them.
Same with the mayoral thing as well. Where's one where Peter Harris dominated in 2004 with 7,600, but even so, I've lost it. Last one, Alan Sanson won with 10,000 votes.
Because there must be some explanation, because in 2001 the turnout was 51.9%, whereas recently it's been closer to a third.
Has the size of the ward increased? Wouldn't be anything useful, would it? Because it would just be like around the edge of the rural areas that they would have increased the size of the... I think they probably shrank
They did change the size of the ward. I think it was about 2006.
More people in it?
And because the rural ward of Whangaroa used to come almost into town, so I think the community board area is pretty much what the old Raglan ward used to be, so that would explain the difference. But it still doesn't explain the difference in I suppose it does, because you had four candidates all had over 200 votes back in 2001, so you actually add up those and you're close to, in a smaller ward, you're close to the 2037 that was the electoral roll in those days, whereas the electoral roll now is over 5,000. For the Whangaroa, or the Raglan ward, as it used to be, the Whangaroa ward, as it now becomes.
Well, the new one, I mean, we know that our ward has now got a lot more people in it because there's been two wards created for Māori, people on the Māori voting roll. Uh-huh. And so the general wards, the number of them has increased, so they therefore...
Yeah,
they have to have more people in them.
6,000.
Yeah. Have we learned anything from at all useful, John, or is it just a thing that I've noticed?
I'd forgotten that the ward had been increased, but yeah, because we used to have just that town area.
Yeah. Okay.
And as I say, it depends how evenly the votes are split as to whether the lead vote is all that much higher or not, and I think Lisa won by a comfortable majority last time, whereas, as you say, Leslie Syme back in 2001 only won by 13 votes.
Yeah, but even then, like the next, in 2004, Clint Baddeley won by a lot, more than double the next highest vote candidate, which is actually Fred Litchback, interestingly enough. But his vote kind of tapered off as the years went on, until he only just won in 2010 by 26 votes, but then 2013 again he won with a big majority before stepping down when Lisa stood unopposed in 2016, and then she had people run against her in 2019 and she cleaned up, basically.
I think it depends on the number of people standing against you and their popularity, so
yeah. And that
it was Malibu Hamilton who was within 26 votes of Clint at one stage, so he was pretty well known around town.
And that year, that's the 2010, there was Matt Hole and Alan Vink running as well. Matt Hole's a former councillor. So there's they were all white men, but quite a diverse set of characters in terms of what their policies might be. Oh, they're not, I'm sorry. I've just called Malibu a white man. Sorry, Malibu. Hope you're not listening.
He's in Thames now, so he won't be.
Okay, yeah. Thank goodness for that. All right, he was a major point of diversity, actually, and it's probably why he came close to second. So that's a little bit of the history of councillor. Do we want to talk about the mayors? Basically, Alan Sanson got in. He beat Clint Baddeley, ran for mayor. Clint told me that someone encouraged him to run for mayor. He wasn't sure he wanted to.
I think it's quite often the case that councillors get encouraged to stand and that they wouldn't otherwise, because Lisa was very doubtful about becoming a councillor first time round, but quite a lot of people talked to her and persuaded her that she should.
Yeah. So back to when Alan Sanson became mayor, he got, 5,400 votes. Clint got 4,300, which I think is pretty good for the old Waikato district, for someone who's not from the rural area in the middle of the district, to actually get that close.
Well, except you pointed out that this time we're not going to have a farmer as a mayor.
No. Plus also we've got that whole bit of the old Franklin district up north, which is now quite a big urban area. I think that changes the district quite substantially. So anyway, after that, Alan Sanson won with continuous ease throughout the years, no matter who the challenger was, including some strong runs from other council members. So, yeah, we all had to wait, as we do in the rural councils in New Zealand, for the existing mayor to step down before we got a new mayor, which we're getting this year.
Yeah, it does seem quite hard to stand against an existing mayor. Probably just because of name recognition, because many people just go on a name that they recognise as being familiar, rather than knowing anything else about somebody.
It does seem to have an influence. I don't think anyone would ever say, "Oh, yeah, I recognise the name, so I voted for them." Like, no one would actually say that, but nonetheless, it seems to work out that way.
Yep.
For the red list, Hamilton. Hamilton, they seem to want to chuck out their mayor every time. It seems to be a new mayor every time, so it'll be interesting to see if Paula Southgate gets back in. Based on previous experience, we'd say no, but you never know. I want to look at the Raglan Community Board quickly over the years. I don't know what I can tell you. 2001, I can tell you who won. Wayne Morris, Brian Johnston, who I think was the pharmacist, was he?
Yes, he was.
Matt Hole, Rangi Kiriopa, Anne Gere, and Kevin Doig. Kevin Doig, is he still with us?
No, Kevin died about 5 years ago.
5 years ago. Anne Gere, is she still in
I think
Raglan?
She's died as well. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, we're going back 20 years, folks, 21 years. Rangi, thankfully, the others are still with us, I understand. But
still taking an interest in local politics,
Yes. Then let's just list. 2004, we had Rangi Kiriopa again, Anne Gere, Peter Storey, Wayne Morris, Cilla Spooner, and Barry Ashby on the community board. And actually, one of the people there got voted down, which is quite rare to happen. 2007, Leanna Darby, Sarah Harihari, Rangi Kiriopa, Peter Storey, Terry Gibbs, and Cilla Spooner again. So that's 2007.
Leanna got the highest poll that year, but she still didn't become chair of the community board.
Yes, that was previous community board chair Peter Storey got that. But he also wasn't the highest the previous year.
Because it does seem odd to me that we vote for a mayor, but we don't vote for a chair of a community board.
I think maybe some people don't want to be chair. There's certainly...
Well, I think you've established that this time nobody wants to be chair.
Yeah, I know. I'm quite concerned about that. We might have to get a specialist chair, just someone in to chair the board and not actually have votes. 2010, Roger Gallagher, Bob McLeod, Alan Vink, Barry Ashby, Terry Horn, Nolan McCathy, and Linda Cole. No, wait. Oh, no, that's the... So this was interesting. In 2010, Linda Cole came last and Nolan McCathy second to last. But then when the final vote was done, it swapped around. And that seems to happen just about every year, is the people on that borderline, if you're the last candidate in, there's a very good chance that you'll drop out after they finish counting the votes.
Yeah, because Fred Litchfark's been in that position twice, both times he's been elected. So
on the regional council.
It looked as though he'd just lost marginally, and then the final votes came in and he'd just won.
Yeah. So that year, also compare the vote totals. We're talking about 500 for the for the number one candidate in the Raglan Community Board. That jumped dramatically, but then they did increase the boundary of the Community Board at some point. In 2013, there was no election because only six people ran and they all got in. That was Linda Cole, Bob McLeod, Matt Hole, John Taylor, Boyd Dixon and Alan Vink.
And it looked as though it was going to be that way this year, but then at the last moment, several candidates came forward, so we've now got nine candidates to choose from for six places.
Actually, a bit of the one of the things I've noticed is in the early 2000s, there were always plenty of candidates, four or five extra candidates for the seats available, and then we get to the 2010s and it really drops off. And even 2016, technically there were seven candidates, but one of those was Lisa Thompson, who went on to become councillor at the same election. So everyone who ran got a place as well. 2019, thankfully, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So one or two people missed out. Two people missed out in 2019.
Marcus Cully and...
Alan Vink.
Yep.
And Gabriel, by way, you can tell the community board got bigger because 900 people was the amount of votes that Gabriel Parson got in 2019. All right. Anything else, John? We're out of time.
Just hope that people are now going to get round to voting before Saturday, 12 noon. And as I say, if you've got some doubts about whether it's worth voting for Axel as mayor, then have a look at his website and have a look at that community page and the links from it.
Have you made up your mind who you're voting for in all the different places, John?
I'm getting there.
You're getting there.
I've still got my voting papers unopened at the moment.
Well, mine are open, but I haven't done anything with them. I've interviewed everybody that I could vote for, and I'm finding the regional council one hard to work out what to do. I really am. But the rest of them, I'm fairly comfortable. I think I know what I want to do.
Yeah, I'm probably just going to vote for Fred for the regional council.
Well, we know that you will. You're fairly allied. Just one, because that's the thing, where there's four candidates, you can vote for two seats in the regional council, but you don't have to, I guess. You can just vote for one of them.
Well, it's the same for any of them. If you only vote for one in the whole of all this election, you could just vote for one candidate as mayor, or one candidate as councillor, or one candidate as community board member, or, as you say, one on regional council. So
yeah, actually, for strategic voting folks for the community board, that's definitely something you can do. If you've got a certain number of, say there's three or four of them that you definitely want to see in, and the rest you're ambivalent about or whatever, then you can just vote for three or four.
Yeah, because otherwise the vote that you make for one that you're not all that worried about might defeat the one that you were consent to get on there.
Yeah, and we do, and you know, individual votes matter. You can see it at this level. Because we're talking about what happened last time, then there was like 20 votes between getting on and not getting on the community board, I think. Actually, no, less, seven. Yeah, seven votes between getting on or not getting on the community board. So, yeah.
So that might well be seven people who really wanted that candidate but also voted for somebody else.
Yeah. So there you go. There's finally something useful we can tell people. There's some strategy for voting for the community board. And regional council too, because you get two seats there. But I don't think we get anything else, do we?
Well, we haven't got district health board this time because that's been included in the new national setup for the health services, which seemed rather less democratic. But they are moving towards producing more information. So
how democratic were the old health boards though, when you didn't really know anyone you were voting for or anything about them except a sort of three paragraphs they'd written?
Well, recently they have been holding local meetings, which is some improvement on what they were doing before.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what's going to happen. Well, in fact, they have continued that under the new regime, so it may be that it's going to work out. But I haven't actually been to any of those meetings.
Okay. Well, that's getting into more detail than I think anyone can handle, John. So I think it's time for us to wrap up. It's 6 minutes past. I can cut a song out for the edit for tomorrow. But thank you for coming in. And you're on the air tonight, you're doing anything?
I've still got some of those candidates to catch up with from your interviews.
Oh, you're going to replay some?
Yeah, because one of the problems with the new system on the radio website is that the ones you interviewed originally have dropped off the website.
Oh, have they?
So, Yes.
Oh, I'll go and put them back on right now. That's not what's supposed to happen. Although you can find them. Folks, if you want to go right now and look, you can go into the news section where the transcript is, and the audio will still be there to play.
Yep. So
that's one way to find it.
It's quite a useful guide, particularly for the commute board candidates, because, as you say, they don't really have policies. They just have people, and you can judge on their experience or background or whatever.
Yeah, that sort of thing. All right, John, thanks for coming in.